Okay, seems that most people have settled down now. It's apologize for not being here last Friday. Last Friday I was teaching a meditation retreat in Indonesia. But I also always like telling people funny anecdotes of what I get up to when I go overseas. Because in Indonesia, you know, some of the books which I've written, especially the Opening the Door of Your Heart, they were translated into Indonesia and became a bestseller, literally number one. And so did the second and third books. So I'm very well known in Indonesia. If you ever go to the bookstores in Indonesia, most of the big bookstores, you'll find a cardboard cutout copy of me, which is very weird. When I first saw it, I was a bit shocked. But what that means was when I was left here to fly to Indonesia via Bali on the Garuda flight, just as we were taking off, or just after, the flight attendant came up and asked me, he said, "Are you Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yeah." The last time I checked, I was. And then she put her hand on her heart and said, "I'm your number one fan. I've got all your books. You're wonderful." And I thought she would swoon in the aisle. But later on, after they'd served us all the breakfast and stuff, when they had a little bit of time, she summoned me to the back, to the galley. And there all the flight attendants were lined up. They all wanted photos of me. So there I was, having photo session with all the beautiful flight attendants from the aircraft. And all these Australians, because the flight to Bali, you know, people going on holiday, going surfing, they're all looking back and say, "Hey, we want some attention. You're supposed to be attending us." But no, they were all attending me. So a few of them got a bit sort of complaining about the lack of service during that time. But it's have a lot of fun. And the reason why that happens is because, you know, you've helped people. You've served. You've been generous. You've inspired. And you've helped people in their lives. And, you know, that is a wonderful thing to know that, you know, through the kindness, through the sacrifice, through the generosity, you can create a lot of happiness in life. And that happiness comes back in these ridiculous situations of being summoned by the senior flight attendant, you know, to come to the back, not to get thrown out of the plane, but have photo session. So those sorts of things bring me a lot of happiness and joy. It's a lot of weird times sometimes, but it's very good fun. And the idea of, you know, like giving your heart, looking after people, being generous, being kind, is the subject of this evening's talk, simply because it's on the front of my mind with this gala dinner we're having tomorrow night. And you've seen all of the posters up now. And so I've wanted to give another talk. It's a long time since I've given a talk on actually generosity. But please don't think a talk on generosity is a trick to get money out of people, because you cannot force generosity. And this is one of the problems with, it's a beautiful part of the human heart, but because in our modern society it's been abused by people asking, using psychological pressure, you know, having just in your face cans being rattled in front of your face, getting sort of demands and people raising funds for this cause and that cause. Sometimes they say it's donor fatigue. It's not donor fatigue. It's the fact that we've taken the heart out of generosity and looked upon it like as a burden, something we have to do, rather than, as I always understood generosity, it's just something you just want to do, you like to do, and you get great fun out of it. And I'll begin with one of my stories. That if you really, really, really wanted to force people to make money or to give donations, it's very easy to do. This is why I brought my watch out here. All I need to do is swing it in front of your eyes until you're hypnotized, just like this story of a monk in the temple a long time ago who's having trouble raising funds for his monastery. And so he asked the senior monk in the district, you know, sort of a monk who'd been a monk a long time, and he said, "You know, I really need to raise funds to pay the bills and to mend all the stuff in our monastery, sort of, what can I do?" And he said, "It's very easy, do what I did." He said, the next time you give a sermon, close all the doors and the windows, turn the heaters up, make it very stuffy, and give a boring talk in a low monotone, so that because of the heat and the low monotone, boring talk, people start to fall asleep. And just before they fall asleep, get out your watch and get them hypnotized. And once they're hypnotized, just give them the hypnotic suggestion that as you go out, you must give a donation. But no coins, not even fives, tens or twenties, only fifties and hundreds. And he said, I can't do that. That's fraud. And the senior monk says, it's not fraud. It's good karma, allowing people to do something good. So he tried it. He closed all the doors and the windows of the temple. He sort of turned up the heater, gave a boring talk, which he found very easy to do. And then when everyone was falling asleep, he got his watch, hypnotized them. No coins, no fives, tens or twenties, only fifties and hundreds. And he made a fortune that day. Just the whole donation box was full of fifties and hundreds. But he decided he can't do that every week, otherwise people will soon suss him out and find out, you know, what's going on. So he waited until he needed an infusion of cash to pay his bills. And he tried it again. He closed the doors and the windows, turned the heaters up, gave a boring sermon. People were about to fall asleep, and he got out his watch and started to swing it. And before he could say no fives, tens or twenties, he dropped his watch. And it fell on the floor and broke. And just in shock, he said, oh, shit. And you know what happened next. That's what happens when you hypnotize people. And serve that fellow right, because that's not the way you that's destroying generosity. Where I learned what generosity truly was a story from His Holiness the Dalai Lama a long time ago when he first was, when he was still in Tibet. You know, he was obviously a very well-known personage in that part of the world, but he was totally unknown, basically, in the West. But nevertheless, there was one of these enterprising journalists, you know, was doing an article about this Dalai Lama fellow before, you know, anyone really knew who he was, and so was following him when he went on a tour of the towns and villages, you know, throughout Tibet, you know, to see, you know, the Buddhist people and to see his followers. And as he was following the Dalai Lama going from place to place, he said what really started to upset him was how all these very poor people were giving these gifts to the Dalai Lama. And he knew that Dalai Lama lived in his Potala palace. He didn't need anything. And sometimes incredibly poor people were giving him things. And on one day, this incredible powerful moment which changed this Western journalist's attitude to, you know, understanding what generosity really was, he saw this very poor woman, you know, dressed in rags, come up to His Holiness the Dalai Lama and give him a woman's skirt as a gift. And this Western journalist just got apoplectic. He just started shouting and screaming. He said, what are you doing accepting a woman's skirt from this incredibly poor lady? You're a man, you don't wear skirts. She needs it, not you. And anyway, you've got so much. Why do you receive this from a girl who needs it more than you, who's really poor? It's a woman's skirt. Are you some transvestite monk or what? And that's when the Dalai Lama responded very calmly. And that's why he's a very good example, because when people get angry at you, please never get angry back. Just let them say what they need to say, calm them down, and then you can speak in a calm tone. And a lot of times what you say really goes in because it comes from calmness rather than from anger. If you speak out of anger, people don't hear what you say, they only hear the anger. So that sort of swamps any meaning which you have. The Dalai Lama was very skilled in that. Instead of getting angry back, he said very calmly, you're right, it's true, I don't need a woman's skirt, but that poor woman needed to give it to me. And with that, the Western journalists understood why we have generosity. It may not be that we need things, but we need to give. That is the most important thing. And that needing to give, you may all know that in your own lives. Whenever, you know, maybe it's your son or your daughter comes to visit. And there's nothing which a mother likes more than having a son or daughter visiting and just feeding them. They get so much joy out of that. Why is that? It is because the joy of giving is one way which we can express our respect and love for another person. That is why we have things like Valentine's Day. Sometimes we commercialize and we destroy this beautiful act of giving to the person we love by forcing it. But you know, sometimes you can see that just a surprise gift to a person you care for and love, the person doesn't really need it, but you need to give it, and that's why it's very, very beautiful. But you know, being in the mood I am this evening, I can never forget that story of the woman who was asked by her husband, "It's Valentine's Day tomorrow, dear, what do you want?" And she said, "Look, I don't need anything." And he was wise enough to not to take that seriously. He said, "No, I want to buy you a present. Just what do you want?" And she said, like a good woman should, "Anything with diamonds in." So being a good husband, he got her a pack of playing cards. That was the end of that marriage. But the whole idea of that's not real giving. It's that's giving because you have to, or giving just to teach people a lesson. Now, what real giving is just this beautiful, caring heart. You just want to serve. You want to give. You want to do something, you know, to show your respect and kindness to one another. And that is where sort of giving becomes beautiful. And it's also giving when you don't expect anything back in return. You know, there's been so many great donors of our Buddhist society, but in this place you will never see any person's name on the wall. I know in some temples or in some, like in the telethon, I've never seen a telethon, but they say that, you know, just so-and-so has given $1,000, so-and-so has given $500. And that's not generosity anymore, because I call that buying advertising rights for your ego. You know, it's so-and-so's hall or so-and-so's monastery. So we try not to do that at all, because that is, you know, the anonymous donor is the very best, because what they are doing, they're coming from their heart. They just, "I want to do this, I want to support, this is a very good cause." And they do it from the heart without being forced. And that's, you know what it's like when you're forced, you know, when somebody puts psychological or other pressure on you. That just destroys a natural part of the human heart, which just loves to support, to give, to make sure that everybody is happy and well. And I can't do that with any funds, because you don't have funds as a monk. But what I do that with my time. And if I ever go overseas and I'm not here and you wonder where I am, and I should be in Perth because you feed me and you look after me, but as soon as you've got a chance, you rush away somewhere else. It's because, again, it's the way I can be kind and the way I can be generous. On Sunday afternoon, I've only just come back from Indonesia. On Sunday afternoon, I'll be travelling to Brisbane to do a really silly thing in one way, just because there's one lady who's always been very kind to me, lives in London, that she wanted me to visit and bless the house of her daughter who lives in Bundaberg. And it's a long distance to try and get there. But, you know, she's been kind to me. You know, she's been giving me a lot, so this is my way I can give back. And you don't do that because you have to. It's because you want to. And a lot of times that's the way I can be generous and kind to other people. And why am I generous and kind? Because that's my expression of love and compassion to everybody. And even a few people knew that as soon as I came back from Indonesia on Tuesday afternoon, after a very busy time. I had to get up 3 o'clock in the morning in Indonesia to get the flight and just come back here. And in the evening, I went to the Cambodian Buddhist Society. They're having trouble there with some neighbours, the usual stuff. And just to help somebody else. I didn't need to do that. I shouldn't have done that. But you do it because you want to do it. And when you give from your heart like that, then that becomes the real generosity. What it is it's being selfless, seeing someone who needs something. You don't need to be asked. You just want to. And that was something which was part of my training so much as a young monk. And it gave you so much joy to be able to serve, to be able to give. And a lot of times that you know that you may have your house, you have your chores, what you need to do. In the monasteries in Thailand, we would fight to do other people's chores as well as our own to see how many chores we could do. In other words, this was just a way that we could give because we just loved giving. I know that one monk is a good friend of mine. He's an abbot over in, I don't know if he ever listens, he's an Ajahn Manindo over in Harnam. No, we were in the same monastery together and we had to get up 3 o'clock in the morning. And one day he was saying, oh, it's just so hard to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And it'd be wonderful if we could have a cup of tea when I want to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he said that once. And I thought, right, I'm going to get up at 2 o'clock and make him a cup of tea. Find out somewhere I can make him a cup of tea. And I got so much happiness out of that. You know, it was hard to do that. I had to get up an hour early. Getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning is difficult, okay? And getting up at 2 o'clock, take another hour off. And just so I could go to his hut at 3 o'clock when the bell went, knock on his door and surprise him, here's your cup of tea. And I got so much happiness out of that, so much joy. I didn't need to do it, but it was my way of giving to somebody else. And that type of generosity, of just seeing a good cause or seeing a reason, and I gave because I needed to give. In the culture where I came from, you know, in England, it was just all about me, what I need and how, you know, my what I require for myself. And that gives us such a selfish, such a cold, such a lonely type of existence. And there's many parts of Buddhism which surprised me, just the great wisdom, you know, of a Buddha, unexpectedly so. Because you all may know that, you know, people come to feed the monks every day. And we're old enough to cook for ourselves. In fact, sometimes I'd love to cook for myself, then I might get what I like to eat. But the way that the Buddha set up, you know, the monasteries for monks and nuns was that we can't cook our own food, we can't buy our own food, we can't store food. Every day we have to rely on you guys to feed us. Why? And the reason is because if we did not have that, you know, Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, the Nuns Monastery in Gijagana would be self-sufficient. And if they were self-sufficient, what we'd be saying in big neon letters is, we don't need you. And we'd have an enclosed monastery with no contact, no care, no love. The way the Buddha set up his monasteries was to make the monks and the nuns intentionally dependent. We had to depend on others. And this is, sometimes it was difficult. When I first came here, just a couple of weeks ago, I took a couple of the monks to the first place we stayed here in Magnolia Street in North Perth to see the tiny house. And in those days, that sometimes that people wouldn't feed us. They'd forget to come. They put the food in the refrigerator the night before. But because it was the night before, the monks, we can't store food. It means we couldn't touch it. We could see it. We could smell it. But we couldn't touch it. And our rule is we have to eat before midday. We'd be looking at the clock, wondering when somebody's going to come. It got to 11 o'clock, no one was there. Maybe they're late. 11:30, oh no, they've forgotten us. 11:45, as the clock ticked to 12 o'clock, oh no. And then they turn up, we're late. I'm sorry, we can't eat now. That was a lot of suffering. But it was worth it. And the reason was because now you are dependent now on others, which means we're saying, the monks are saying, I need you. And that's the first stage of this beautiful thing called compassion and love, to recognize that we do need each other, to be deliberately dependent on somebody else. Otherwise, we'd have a cold religion rather than the beautiful warmth of Buddhism. And so please, each one of you, be deliberately dependent on somebody else. Otherwise, yes, you can live alone, but you'll be terribly lonely and you miss out this beautiful interaction of generosity, kindness, giving towards one another, helping and having a beautiful, fun and enjoyable life. If you live alone, self-sufficient, your sense of self gets very strong. The ego of separation from others. This is one of the biggest problems in our world. In old days, we had tribal societies. We lived in groups. You know, we were part of a tribe, and we didn't really have so much self-identity. We would share, we would give towards one other people. And for those of you, you know, who are Asians, you know, whenever you have food, you always put the dishes in the middle, and everybody sits around. Now everyone has their own plates. You can see the sort of the selfishness, the mind, what I want, what I have, has been crept into people when they become too independent. When we really realize we have to share and care for one another, then of course it's very different. I remember this was an old Christian story which somebody told me a long time ago, which comes to my mind, about the difference between heaven and hell. They say, sort of in hell, sort of they have as much food as you ever want, but they've got only a spoon to actually eat it with, and the spoon is 3 foot long. And the people in hell, they can put the food on the end of the spoon, but they can't get it in their mouth. Because imagine a 3 foot long spoon with the food on the end. How can you get it into your mouth? That's why it's suffering. You can see it, you can smell it, but you can't put it into your mouth. And the only difference between that and heaven, then they have the same food, the same size spoons, but people feed each other. That's why it's called heaven. And it's a very, you can see a very simple story with a simple message. If we care for one another rather than just thinking about ourselves, we actually do create a heaven in our world. And that is where generosity, compassion, love really come from. I'm not sure if this is true. Some people say it is, some people say it isn't, but sometimes I like to you know, use a bit of the linguistics of the word like love in English. And it's very close, I think, in German to Liebe, and which, you know, Liebe is love in German, is so close to liberality, which is both means giving and also freedom, liberty. You can see that giving, freedom, love is so close together. It seems to have a common root, you know, in our language. And there's a good reason for that, because people you love, again, you just enjoy giving to. I remember the story of one of our monks who went to, I don't know if I told this 2 weeks ago, who went to go and visit his family in Chicago. And Chicago is a very cold city, and it was icy. He slipped on the ice and broke his leg. And so he went straight into hospital, you know, fixed his leg up, put a plaster on it, and there he was in bed, plastered. And his mother came to visit him. His mother heard, you know, left her work and came to see her son, who had a broken leg in hospital. And this monk said, as soon as my mother came into the ward and saw me with a broken leg, she grinned from ear to ear. And I couldn't understand, Mum, why are you so happy? I've just broken my leg. It hurts. Why are you smiling and grinning like I've never seen you before? Because, son, said the mother, now I've got you exactly where I want you. And I can give and mother and care for you for the next couple of weeks, and you can't run away. If you are a mother, you understand what she meant. Because there's something about caring and giving and looking after a person which is beautiful. And that is also why, you know, if anyone comes and looks after you and cares for you while you're in hospital or while you're sick, please never ever think, no, I don't want you to be bothered. Please, you don't have to look after me. Please, you know, just you're busy, don't come. Please never say that. It's not that you need to be visited when you're sick in hospital. It's that other people need to visit you. And if you can understand that, you can understand what we mean by generosity, compassion, love, giving towards one another. So please, if ever you are sort of in hospital, please never say no visitors. Yeah, you don't need visitors, but other people need to visit you. There's not enough kindness and care in this world. There's not enough generosity coming from the heart. That is why it needs to be respected and encouraged. And it's the same when, again, people give you something which you don't need. That has happened to me many, many, many times. One of my favorite stories which happened here, oh, maybe about 20 years ago now, is when a lady, she's very old now, and actually she died. She's older than dead, or dead, more dead than old. I don't know. You know what I mean anyway. When on a Friday afternoon she came up and she said, Ajahn Brahm, I've knitted you some socks just for you. And you can, all those people who have noticed me, even though it's very cold, I never wear socks. I did wear socks when I went to England and last time, but I usually don't wear socks. I've got very good circulation. Even when I was a student, you know, in places like Cambridge, I'd wear thongs without any shoes and without any socks on. I just got used to that. You know, I just like the freedom of, you know, your feet feeling the air. So I hardly ever wear socks. But this lady knitted them for me all by herself. And she gave them to me special. So what do you think I did? I put them on. But not just put them on. I was sitting here, sort of giving the talk. And as I was giving the talk, you know, I moved as if I was a bit stiff. And I put one leg out as far as I possibly could. And the lady, I remember she was sitting over there. And I was looking at her, and sure enough, oops, got some crap. Sure enough, that she turned around during my talk to her friend and said, he's wearing my socks! He's wearing my socks! And she was so happy that I was wearing her socks. And when I got back into my room after the talk, I took the socks out, put them in a drawer and gave them to someone else the next day. But at least I wore them once. It's because sometimes this is the important thing about generosity. Imagine if I say, no, I don't need that, and just threw it back at her. How would you feel? That is terrible. That's disgusting. That's so cruel. Even if you don't want socks, wear them. So, but please don't, you know, give me a skirt or something, because I will not wear that.
Okay. Oops.
But I'll still receive it and say thank you and give it to someone who needs it more than I do. But if ever anyone gives you a gift, please never refuse it. Accept it. And if you don't need it, give it on to somebody else. And that way the gift goes on and on, because you're encouraging the beautiful acts of generosity. Because those acts of generosity, they do give you so much happiness and joy. When I did have money as a lay person, you know, one of the great acts of generosity which I did, I went to a Buddhist talk, you know, when I was a lay person. And you know, it wasn't any theory. He wasn't saying the Four Noble Truths or Anicca Dukkha Anatta, the three characters of existence. It was just this English nun, you know, Tibetan tradition. It was just explaining about the orphanage she was running in Sikkim. It was like Buddhism in action. She'd just been kind, you know, spending her life, sacrificing her life to looking after a group of orphans in a very poor part of the world. And I thought, I was so inspired. The next day, you know, I did something really stupid. I went to the bank and took £10 out. You may think that's not much money. That was in 1969 or something. For me, that was 2 weeks' food money. And I didn't starve, but I went hungry. And I didn't have as much in my tummy as I usually did. And you know, it hurt. Not that much. It wasn't sort of... But I always remember that. Because it hurt, because it was a hard gift to give, I always remember that. And to this day, that gives me so much joy and happiness. And the other gift, which I which I remember, both of these people are dead now, but I always remember, you know, one of the people, many of you know, Tui, she passed away just earlier on. When she first, she was a Laotian girl, a refugee, who was, you know, for sometimes, and I care for the refugees, and you may have a different sort of idea about refugees, but, you know, these were refugees who came from, this is for her, from Laos, after the war between the communists, and she fled over the border with her family. And in the refugee camp, you know, something went terribly wrong. All of her family got settled in Oregon, United States, and she got sent to Perth alone, separated from all the other people she'd grown up with. And to make matters worse, you know, it was here in that reception area when she came to see me, crying and weeping. She'd got, in these days, a telegram, you know, from her family that her mother was dying. Can you please come and see your mother for the last time? And the reason this Laotian refugee girl was crying, she just, no way could she afford it. You know, she didn't really have the money. She couldn't get a loan from the bank. You know, she was just a woman, a refugee, just starting out in life. And she was crying, I can't see my mum. She's dying. There's no way I can afford it. And as I was talking to her, trying to console her, there's another lady, a Thai girl, who was, she used to be a nurse, but she injured her back. She was trying to get compensation, and she just would not be given the compensation. So she was struggling financially too. But without saying anything, she just wrote out a check. Actually, it was a blank check. Signed it at the bottom. Fill in the amount you want, she said to this Lao girl, and go and see your mum. And because it was so spontaneous and just so kind, blank check, she had it signed. Go and see your mother. And I thought that was just so beautiful, such a wonderful act of kindness. She never thought, you know, how is she going to, you know, survive after, you know, paying for an air ticket to Oregon for this Laotian lady? But it just needed to be done. She never thought of the economics. It just needed to be done, so I'm going to do it, and what the hell? And of course, those are what we call beautiful acts of kindness. Those are what we mean by generosity, which is spiritual, which moves the heart, which hardly anybody knows about. I knew about that because I saw it. Otherwise, no one would have known about that. That is beautiful. That is gorgeous. The thing needs to be done. We don't even think whether we can afford it. It needs to be done. We just do it. And my goodness, you find you always can afford it. Always something happens afterwards, you know, so you can actually do that. Let's say another amazing story. Again, these are anecdotes from my life because this makes these teachings actually real. They do work. When you give expecting nothing back in return, we just give because you need to give, because your heart says this needs to be done and it must be done. There was a man in Perth. He was divorced, just got divorced. And, you know, being the man who gets divorced, you know, he had to move out of the house, find a cheap apartment, no furniture. But the thing which he said happened when he was divorced, he had a pedigree dog. In the small apartment which he moved into, he couldn't keep a dog in there. So he had to find a home for the dog which he loved. And because it was a pedigree dog, he managed to find a woman, an elderly woman, who had a dog of the same breed, who knew how to look after this particular type of dog. So he gave it to this woman. And the woman, you know, because you know that he would go and visit his dog, he became very friendly with this woman, the new owner of his dog. And she was elderly, you know, retired, living alone just with her dog. Now she had two dogs to look after. And she could not drive. And so he just told her, so look, if ever you need a lift anywhere, just give me a call, I'll help. And especially he had his own small business, you know, just getting by, but, you know, not making very much. So he could always take time off. And he told me he actually enjoyed taking time off because, you know, he got away from the business, you know, he could actually do something else, gave him a break. And, you know, he liked this old lady and it was just an act of kindness and service. He just needed to do that. And so she would ring him sort of maybe once a week or maybe twice. You know, I need to go and see my doctor. I need to go and see the dentist. And he would go and pick her up, take her there, wait for her and take her home again afterwards. It was this nice act of charity. But then he told me one day the woman called him at work and said, I need to see my lawyer. I'm terribly sorry to bother you. Now, are you free? He said, yeah, sure. So he picked her up, took her to see her lawyer up in St. George's Terrace. And he said, oh, would you mind if you just come up with me? Because I think I need you, you know, to witness something or whatever. And so he came up with her, and it had all been prearranged with the lawyer. There in front of the lawyer, she made him the sole beneficiary of her considerable assets, which were huge. She was a multimillionaireess. She died 6 months later, and he didn't need to work anymore. It always gets that way. If you give not expecting anything in return, if you really are kind, then it always comes back to you. It's the law of karma. However, if you find an old lady, you know, who's rich, and think, anything you need. Of course, that won't work. You're doing it with the wrong intentions. It has to be from a pure heart, of really not expecting anything back in return. So that is one of the most important parts of generosity. You don't expect any reward, no thanks, no tax receipts for your donations. This is what the real giving truly is. And that is beautiful. That inspires me. That just shows this world is a loving, good, incredibly wonderful place. It actually melts your heart. And it makes you feel at the end of your week, at the end of the year, you've actually done something for this world. Because sometimes if you do, you know, you're living your life, sometimes, yeah, you don't want to leave sort of scars on the planet, but you want to leave a footprint. You want to make sure that your life, what you've done in this world, has had some meaning, has made this world a better place. Sometimes when people ask, what is the meaning of life? Yeah, I mean, it is learning for yourself, but it's also contributing to some bigger cause, something which is much larger than you. And if you can do that, you get a huge amount of happiness back. Now, my giving is actually building monasteries, you know, ordaining the nuns, you know, teaching you guys, making this Buddhist community strong and creating harmony between sort of the other religions as well. And my goodness, I've been quite successful at that. Just saying, just even being able to touch, you know, I mean, not physically, you know, beautiful flight attendants who work for Garuda. I mean, like touch their hearts, not nothing else. I've got to be careful sometimes as a monk. But be able to actually to inspire people and change their lives and make them feel accepted, wanted, and have more happiness, more self-esteem, more joy and direction in their lives. It's an incredible, wonderful gift to be able to give to other people. And I managed to be able to do that. And that gives me incredible happiness and joy. That's my gift. And sometimes I look at the monasteries which I physically built and you get so much joy afterwards, all the extra time you've given to people. And what I really like is the things which I shouldn't have done, the stupid things which I do. I'll always remember this lady who, she was a very kind donor to the Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center. And she, I think a friend called me. And it was I think it was a Friday night or Friday afternoon. She said, this woman's husband has just died. The funeral's tomorrow on Saturday. Can you come? And I was, you know, this was a Friday afternoon. I had to give the Friday night talk. And, you know, all the other things you have to do on Saturday. And I think Sunday there was something big going on. So I thought, no, I can't do that. It's impossible. It's a stupid thing to do. So, of course, because it was stupid, and it was one of those wonderful acts of generosity and kindness, I decided, yeah, of course, I'm going to do it. So after the Friday night talk, got the overnight flight to to Singapore. did the funeral service for them, Saturday evening, I think, the early morning flight back, and back here on a Sunday, you know, for the lunch, dinner, and all the other stuff. That's stupid. Just go to Singapore, just, you know, actually in less than 24 hours over there, just to, you know, to help a lady with her funeral. Of course I'd do that. Because I needed to do that. I wanted to give and care for people who cared for me. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that inspiring? I'm so proud of doing something like that because it gave me so much happiness and joy inside. When you do stupid things like that, yeah, you're really busy, but someone, your friend, comes and says, look, I really need you. You know, there's some tragedy in my life, you know, or my car is broken down. Can you pick me up? And you've got so many other things to do that day. Please pick them up. Don't just think of, you know, oh, I can't do this because I'm busy, I've got other things. No, please serve. You need to give more. You need to care more. You can't care enough. And afterwards, you will never, ever regret that. I totally guarantee any ridiculous acts of kindness, things which you shouldn't do, things which, you know, that no reasonable person would expect of you, do it. Because that gives you so much happiness and joy afterwards. You've actually made a difference. You were kind when you didn't need to be. You were generous when you couldn't afford it. You cared for someone, even though they hurt you. Those are what makes this life an inspiring and wonderful place. That is what we call generosity. Yeah, you may think, this person doesn't deserve it. They really hurt me. This is my boss at work. They've always been cruel to me. No. If it's their birthday, give them a present. Care for them. It doesn't matter if they've never given you anything except a hard time. Care for them and see what happens. We say in Buddhism that, you know, it's not the world is not just fixed. You're not fated. We create the world. When Christians say, you know, who was the creator, and we always say as Buddhists, you are the creator. I am the creator. We all create our world. Not some sort of God figure, you know, a few thousand years ago. No, we create the world. We're always creating the world. And every act of kindness, every act of generosity, every act which is totally unexpected, but you do it because it's inspiring, creates an inspiring, beautiful world. And sometimes I look at the newspapers and it's just so disgusting about economy going down, about football, the cricket, the Australia lost to somewhere or other. It's so negative, you know, the politics. But we need more inspiration in our world. And that inspiration just comes from each one of us. When we do acts of kindness and generosity, especially those which are unexpected, it's not because people need it, it's because we need to give. We need to care. We need to look after one another. So that's why we have things like gala dinners, you know, to build places for the bhikkhunis to live. Yeah, they could all live in. Actually, they haven't got enough places to stay. But at least we need to give, we need to do. Because that is called great good karma. Looking after one another. And I am not, if you look at the nuns and the monks we have here, you have some very good examples of monks and nuns. I did see, there's an article which somebody showed me of scallywag monks. I won't say which country they were in, but they were sitting inside a private jet with a Louis Vuitton bag next to them and Rolex watches on their wrists. Now that really destroys, you know, any idea of what Buddhism should be. Now I encourage people to donate to monasteries, but personally, I live in a cave. I made a resolution a long time ago. I would never live in a place which was more comfortable than my poorest of supporters. And I don't think any of you live in caves or worse than that. So I'm okay. My resolution is being kept. And if you don't believe me, go and look at my cave. It's always open except when I'm sleeping in it. You can go to Bodhinyana Monastery and see the cave in which I live. That's where I sleep and spend all my time. And you see, live simply. And isn't simplicity a beautiful thing? So it's okay to be generous, but I'm saying one thing to you carefully. Please don't give to the monks and nuns things which they should never have. Now, especially expensive stuff. That's why I say give to the monastery, never to the monks. And I'll finish off, you know, with a little story I said to someone this afternoon about what happens, you know, if a monk or a nun gets into too many possessions. And also, I've called this the origin of materialism. Because this is a story about a nun a long time ago who lived in a cave. And she was a very simple living nun. She would go for alms round every morning, just taking her bowl into the village. Whatever they gave her, that's what she would eat that day. And she would meditate, maybe teach people whenever they wanted to ask questions on meditation or Dhamma. She lived a very simple life. But her problem was, in her cave, there was also a family of mice. And one day when she went off into alms round, when she came back, she found that the mice had chewed a hole in her spur robe, which she kept in the cave while she was on alms round. So she had to sew a patch on her robe. And this wasn't the first time she had to sew a patch on her robe. In fact, those mice were always chewing at her possessions. So as she was sewing a patch again and thinking, just how much time does this waste, she had an idea. Why don't I get a cat? Because the cat doesn't have to catch the mice. When the mice smell as a cat in the cave, the mice will go somewhere else and choose somebody else's things. So she asked the villagers, where she went on alms round, for a cat, you know, to keep the mice away which chewed her robes. And they gave her a nice brown cat which matched the colour of her robes. And then she remembered that, well, if I now have a cat, I need some milk to feed the cat. And so she had to ask the villagers every morning when she was on alms round, can I have some milk for the cat? And she thought that became a bit burdensome, asking people for milk every day. So what if I get a cow? So she asked for the villagers for a cow, and they gave her a cow to get the milk to feed the cat, to keep away the mice which chewed her robes. But the trouble, now she had a cow, you know, she needed grass for the cow to eat. So she had to ask the villagers for a big lot of grass every day to feed the cow, to provide the milk, to feed the cat, to keep the mice away who chewed her robes. And asking for grass every day was just, again, a big hassle. So, you know, she got a group of her more wealthy supporters and said, no, be generous, donate a field. Because once I have a field, I can put the cow in the field so the cow can eat the grass, and the cow can give milk for my cat to keep the mice away which chew my robes. So they managed to get a big collection and buy a field. And then once she had a field, I mean, it still needed a lot of work to look after the field and milk the cow. So she asked one of the villagers who had a son who was a bit sort of not very well behaved, if you give your son as an attendant, I would teach it some Dhamma and actually make sure it's a good son. And the villagers thought that was a very good idea. So she managed to get a young boy attendant to look after the field, to feed the grass to the cow, to give the milk to the cat, to keep the mice away which chewed the robes. But once she had a boy, and the boys, you know, males can't live in the same cave as the nun, so she needed a little hut for the boy to live in. So she asked the lay people, can you please have a little hut to look after the boy, to give grass to the cow, to look after the pasture, to give grass to the cow, to provide milk for the cat, to keep the mice away who chew my robes. And then one day, they asked her a question on Dhamma, on meditation. He said, I'm a bit busy, I've got to look after the people who are building the hut to house the boy, to look after the field, to provide grass for the cow, who gives milk to my cat to keep the mice away who chew my robes. And then she realized what she was doing. And so what she did was to tell the villagers, you know, tear down that hut. She sent the boy home. She gave the field back and sold the cow. And even found a nice home for the cat. So she gave all that away, and then she went on alms round as before, and when she came home from alms round, she found the mice had returned and chewed a hole in her robe. But she was so happy to sew the patch in her robe, because that's much more less work. The looking after a hut to keep the boy who looks after the field for the cow which feeds the milk to the cat who keeps the mice away. And she realized this is what's the problem. If you give the wrong things to people, you accept them but then give them away. Sometimes it makes life so complicated. And that's actually the materialism of our modern world. We have so much stuff. And it makes life so much complicated. Isn't it wonderful if you too, like me, could just live in a cave? Imagine how much housework you would need. Imagine how much time you would have. Imagine just how much mortgage you would have to not pay, living in a very simple building. So it's good to be kind, to be generous, but please give the right things. That's why a lot of times, you know, what people do instead of giving Christmas presents to people or birthday presents, they do an act of generosity in their name. They say, give a donation to the project which we're doing for building a nun's monastery. And that's actually, it's not for the nuns. You know who that's for, those buildings there? That's for you guys when you visit to meditate, to have your meals. Monks and nuns, we just love caves. But you know, you have to have a hall to sit in. That's what that's all about. So, but anyway, be careful. Just give the right things. And make sure whatever gifts you ever give to anybody, if at all possible, can be things which are useful. You don't need more diamonds. They're only stones anyway. You don't need too many more things. Try and keep life simple. Try and sort of use less. That's not only is that good for the environment, but it means more simplicity, more peace, more happiness, and more joy in your life. And especially whenever there's an opportunity to help, to serve, just give, expecting nothing back in return. Not because a person needs it, but each one of us needs to build up our heart of care. We need to give, not the person needs it. That's why we do it. So that's just a little talk this evening on the meaning of generosity, compassion, and care. Very good. Oh, there's some questions from overseas. I'm very happy to do this. Here we go. First of all, from Thailand. If lay people are very generous but not wise and give inappropriate gifts to a monk, such as a Rolls Royce, Mercedes, helicopter and Louis Vuitton bag, what should the monk do? What the monk should do was actually to auction it or sell it on and use the money for better purposes. So that's what they would usually do. I've never been given a Rolls Royce, but you know, once, there's another little anecdote. There was a rich Sri Lankan who came to the monastery. He's only come once in his Rolls Royce. And it was a Tuesday afternoon or evening. And one of our monks, every Tuesday, we go and teach in Armidale, in a small meditation group there. Now, you may know Armidale is a low socio-economic area. You know, it's not Netherlands. It's not sort of Dalkeith or Applecross or places. This is really sort of, you know, poor people. But the owner of the Rolls Royce said, well, I'm going that way. I can take you there, drop you off. So one of the monks accepted that. He will never do that again. And he was dropped off in our Armidale group in a Rolls Royce. Everybody saw that and they castigated him. He had such a hard time. He became known as the Rolls Royce monk. So just even seeing a monk in a Rolls Royce doesn't work. Well, actually, once I did actually ride in a stretch limo. And with two, and this is another, I love telling anecdotes. And here in Perth, with two chauffeur drivers in the front. You know what it was? It was a funeral. Because there was a family here, you know, it was a tragedy. Their son, the first child, was actually stillborn. and that they just wanted to give it the best possible funeral. And so they hired a limo, and they put this little box in the back of the limo. It's only about this big. And I was in the back of the limo, and the two funeral attendants were in the front. The family just could not bring themselves to go to the cremation. It was just so sad for them. They said, please, Ajahn Brahm, you do everything. And we're just giving this limo. This is, at least we send our son, you know, to the crematorium in style. But, you know, I had to be in the back as well, in style. So I couldn't resist this. Every time we came to a red traffic light, you know, people would actually look. The windows were actually quite clear. They weren't these tinted ones. Every time we came to a traffic light, you know, people next to you, they'd look in. You had two chauffeur drivers and somebody in the back. And, of course, I would wave to them. They couldn't see the coffin there. It was too small. It was really fun. Playing up to the first time I was in. Actually, the only time I've been in a stretch limo. Yeah, great fun as a monk. So what should you do? Again, the monk should either just, you know, say, well, look, it's inappropriate to give such things to monks. What does actually a monk mean? What does a nun mean? You should know what the word nun means. You know, none of this, none of that, none of anything. But, you know, he's supposed to live a simple life, so look like it as well. So if anyone does that, you either say, no, don't do that. Or if they do it, then you just put it on the market. Even, are they here today? I'm not sure, but this couple of weeks ago, somebody said, do you want a big plasma screen TV? No, we don't need a plasma screen TVs. You know, we don't have those. And I think that they don't mind me telling this. They're regularly here. If you are, please excuse me. But this is a good example of, like, materialism. And I said, well, if it's a second-hand one, you can actually sell it and give a donation to, you know, to our nuns monastery, which really needs the funds. He said, no, it's not an old one, it's a new one. Why did you get a new one which you don't want? He said, not me, my wife. He said, it was on sale. So even though they don't need a new plasma screen TV, there, because it was on sale, because it was a bargain, she had to have it. Oh, come on. You know, that's ridiculous. If you need it, fine. But don't buy it because, you know, it's on sale. It's a bargain. So anyway, I told him, well, the best thing to do, if you've got something you don't need, and don't give it to the monks because, you know, we don't need that, just sell it and just give it as a donation somewhere. That's the best thing to do. So if anyone ever did give me a helicopter, you know, you'd sell it and just auction it, and just the funds would go to the nuns monastery or something. So that's what the best thing to do. And that is happening in Thailand now. Okay, any monks in Thailand who ever see this, if you've got those things, please sell it. There's places where they need the money much more than you need a Rolls Royce. For goodness sake, you're destroying Buddhism, having bad karma. But it's also, I don't know why people, actually I know why people do that in Thailand. You know why they do this? This is absolutely ridiculous. It has nothing to do with Buddhism. Because they think whatever you give to a monk, that's what you will get in your next life. They think that. So, if you want a Rolls Royce to run around heaven in, you have to offer one to a monk first. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's not how karma works. That's a stupid tradition. You will have a wonderful time in your next life if you are kind and wise, not because you give helicopters and Louis Vuitton bags to monks. Anyway, here we go. This is a totally different question. What is emptiness, and what is the difference between emptiness and known self? Okay, here we go. It's a deep question, but one of the best answers is from the Buddhist teachings. It's a totally different subject now. He described this body and mind, otherwise known as you, in terms of five things. And those five things is the physical part, your body, and then you got your feelings, which is the pleasure and pain, with all of the six senses, you know, the beauty, ugliness, a nice sound, terrible sound, you know, bad smell, fragrance, you know, the happiness and suffering with all the different senses. That's the second thing called feeling. Then perception. And then things like intentions and thoughts. And lastly, you know, consciousnesses. Six different types of consciousnesses. You know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, physical consciousness, touch, and also knowing, mind consciousness. That's what we call them, consciousnesses. And the Buddha gave them lovely similes. He said, the body is like a mass of foam on the river. You know, there's actually nothing in there. It's just empty inside. It's got no core to it, this body. It's just stuff, that's all it is. So never think this body is yours. It's just empty of any abiding substance, any core. And this feelings, the pleasure and pain which you have, he said it's just like a raindrop going plop on a puddle. And it just doesn't last that long. That is so similar from the poet Rabbi Burns, the Scottish poet, who says, like pleasures are like poppies spread. You pluck the flower, the bloom is shed. Or like the snowfall on the river, white for a moment and then gone forever. You know, I've seen snow falling on the river. It's a beautiful snowflake. As soon as it hits, it disappears. It melts. And apparently poppies, when you pluck the flower, the petals go off. So that's just how ephemeral are these senses of pleasure and pain. Only for a moment. There's nothing much there at all. And the same even like your perceptions. The Buddha called them like mirages. Like you see on the hot day, you see this water on the road. It's not water, it's just air reflecting. And all your perceptions, your enemies and your friends. It's just the way you perceive them. It's not real. It's empty of any true meaning. Because, you know, all your enemies are loved by others. That really confused me. How can anyone love that person? You know, who was really cruel to you. But these people think they're great. They're wonderful people. It's just our perceptions. And of course we have things like intention. Perceptions were like mirages. He said thoughts, especially, and will. He called that a plantain tree, which many people don't know here. And so a great monk, Venerable Gunaratana, he changed that to an onion. He said, all these thoughts are like onions. You peel them, they've got nothing inside. And also as you peel them, they make you cry. And they go on and on with an I in between. You know, onion, O-N-I-O-N. So your thoughts go on with a me inside. But if you take that I out, there's just nothing there. Peel an onion, there's nothing solid in the middle. He said the consciousnesses, he called them like a magician's trick, like taking a rabbit out of a hat. There's nothing there, it's deluded. And once you see that, there's no other place you can find the self. So it's empty of a self, just a process. But that's a big question, and I try to answer it as best as I can in the context of a few minutes. But lastly, someone from Singapore. I am currently serving my national service, that's in the Singaporean Army. My question is, how do you find inner peace in an environment filled with violence, unhappiness and anger? Okay, I know other people have done national service over in Singapore. It is what you look for, is what you'll see. And in many of the people in Singapore is not fighting a war with anybody. Yes, they are sometimes have to be aggressive as a soldier and shout as you do things and jump up and down and stuff like that. But as long as with the violence, there's also a great sense of looking after one another. Now, I've always been fascinated with how Buddhists actually can be in an army. There are, you know, sometimes it's very easy to be critical of, you know, yeah, they just go around killing people, they're just murderous, you know, soldiers in an army, but they're not, they're much more than that. And you can see the beautiful qualities of looking after one another, sacrificing yourself for a bigger cause. Obviously, you know, the self-discipline of having to train the body, get up early, and not doing what you want to do, but, you know, doing what is needed to be done. So much of that discipline is a very powerful contributor to a good life. So just like anything else, you know, for the person in Singapore, you know, you're doing national service, you can actually, it's like a buffet, you can take whatever you want from that. And there's many things you can do, but how you do it is the most important thing. That you can create something very wonderful and beneficial out of doing your national service. You know, it's not always having to kill people. I remember once when a young man had to do national service in Thailand. And he went to see Ajahn Chah and he said, look, you know, at that time Thailand was having skirmishes on the borders and people were killing one another. And he said, what should I do? I want to keep my five precepts. You know, I want to be know, a good Buddhist, but I've got to join the army. I have no choice. You know what Ajahn Chah told him? He said, train really well. Use it as a great discipline, you know, especially when you learn how to shoot your weapons, your guns. Train so you're a very accurate shot. Because if there ever is a firefight, he said, I want you to aim well above the head of the other guy. And you can only do that if you train well and learn how to shoot accurately. And your commanding officer, they won't criticize you for missing because they just think you're a bad shot. So that was Ajahn Chah's advice to someone joining the army. Be a good shot so you can always miss. Actually, I shouldn't say that too, otherwise if this guy in Singapore's superiors hear that, they may get in big trouble. But that's one way you can do it. So whatever you have to do in life, it's not what job you do, whether you're a monk or whether you are working in a supermarket just stacking shelves or whether you're cleaning the toilets. It's how you do it is the most important trick in life. You can always do it with care, with kindness. You don't have to add violence, unhappiness or anger into that place. You can do it and change attitude. When you change attitude, the job changes too. Hopefully that sort of answers a guy from Singapore. I won't say his name in case he gets into trouble. Are there any questions here from the floor, especially about generosity and kindness? Yeah.
When giving, the pleasure and gratitude that I get from it sometimes seems to overrule the act of giving in itself. So I guess it's in relation to how important is it to not come from ego when being generous.
I think if it comes from ego, you want something back. You want recognition. You know, it's me giving. But what real giving is actually a form of letting go, a form of sharing. And test after test after test has known if you've got, they're giving people $10, buy something for yourself or buy something for somebody else. And they measured their pleasure levels. And you always get more pleasure, more satisfaction if you give to others than you have it for yourself. If I know that somebody else likes a piece of food which I've got, I prefer giving it to them. Every now and again we get ice cream, and sometimes there's more monks than people expected, so there's only two ice creams and three monks. And because I'm senior, I get it first. And instead of eating it, I love giving it to somebody else. I like ice cream. But you know, I get much more pleasure. If there's only one ice cream and it comes to me, I would accept it, and then I'll give it to that monk. Simply because I get more pleasure seeing him happy than eating it myself. That's what generosity is like. So if it's ego, you know, I'd make a big thing of it. I get on the microphone and say, I, the great Ajahn Brahm, the humblest monk in the whole world, will hereby gives my ice cream to Venerable Upasamo. Please a round of applause for me. A lot of times, the great givers, people don't know what they've done. You just get a gift in the post. Or, you know, just someone leaves it sort of, you know, on your seat. That's beautiful when that happens. I just like to give. So does that answer the question, sort of? Yeah. But please, don't be afraid of the joy of giving. And just don't look at the face of the person receiving it to see, you know, if they're happy or not. Look at your heart. You've actually given something. Now, another little quick anecdote before we finish off. There was you got a question? Yeah, sorry. Questions first.
Kind of adding on to what you just last said, what if you're a very giving person and you do love to give, but the person that you're giving to repetitively it doesn't seem to appreciate it with their
heart?
Doesn't
matter. That's if they appreciate it, that's just gravy, that's extra, that's a free gift in the cornflakes box, their appreciation. I just want to give, I don't care whether you appreciate it or not. I just want to give. You know, all those jokes I've told, and you know, I don't care if you appreciate them or not. I just love giving them. Just as well, too. So please don't worry if they appreciate it. Just keep giving. But then it's really from your heart. And it's just totally independent of them, whether they appreciate it or not. I just want to give. And I want to give. And I want to give. And I want to give. You appreciate it or not, that's just extra. It's taking giving to another level. Okay, I should finish off now because I've gone over time again. So thank you all for listening. We can, is there anything else to say? No, we just pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then you can go and do what you need to do. And of course, please remember, those of you who want to listen in tomorrow night from 6 p.m, our gala dinner fundraising event live at your home.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami